The history of television is a history of failure.
For every television series that lasted years and years, there were dozens that lasted only one season or less.
But did they deserve to die? Or were they canceled too soon?
Everybody, and welcome back to Cancel Too Soon, the podcast where we review television series that lasted only one season or less. My name is William Bibbiani. I'm a critic. Everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Officer Whitney Seibold. I, too, am a film critic. I'm not really an officer. I don't have a cute nickname. And boy, howdy, are we back in our wheelhouse.
Yeah, if there's one thing we love here at Cancel Too Soon, where we review failed television shows, it's 1990s sci-fi shows that nobody gives a shit about.
Short-lived, mid-budget, live-action, hour-long sci-fi TV from the 1990s is my bread and butter.
Embarrassing costumes, embarrassing visual effects. Writing that is, like, really in that sweet spot between genuinely clever and really stupid.
Yeah, somehow it's both of those things at the same time.
It manages to be both! How do you do that, 90s? It's so great! So, this is a genre of television, an era of television, that we're not going to be satisfied with until we get through every single one season or less sci-fi series in the 1990s, and we inch ever closer every time.
We did Earth 2.
Yes.
We did RoboCop.
We did Man and Machine.
Man and Machine is definitely in there.
Ah, what a treat that was.
Well, of course, we did Briscoe County Jr.
Yeah, we did Legend.
And Legend, the other Briscoe County Jr.
Yeah, we did, what was that? What was that one with Clint Howard? It was like Galaxy Rangers or some Space Rangers. Was it Space Rangers?
Space Ranger. It was just called Space Rangers. Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah. We've done a whole bunch of these.
There's the one that Joe Dante did,
Oh, it was like Warlord something?
Warlords, The Osiris Chronicles?
It had two titles. One of them was The Osiris Chronicles, yeah. We did White Dwarf, not Red Dwarf, no relation whatsoever.
No.
White Dwarf was frontier medicine. Like, imagine Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman on an alien planet.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a treat.
And there was, there's like a, immortal mutant warlords ruling the dark side of the planet.
One half of the planet is always in perpetual night, the other one is always in perpetual day, and also there's like someone who can turn into a cat for some reason, and I have magical surgery gloves that allow me to do surgery without knives.
Also I have roaring powers for some reason. Remember that Paul Winfield had roaring powers?
Remember when we did, this is more in the fantasy realm, where we did Heath Ledger in Roar?
I guess it's sort of like adjacent, but yes, I remember Roar.
It's a subcategory of 90s sci-fi, and here we're actually going to be talking about a series that is a swiftly canceled and long-forgotten adjunct to a reasonably successful sci-fi film that a lot of people, at least a lot of people my age, seem to be pretty big fans of. This is a TV series inspired by the Jean-Claude Van Damme motion picture, Time Cop.
The year 2007. Time travel is a reality, and it's fallen into criminal hands. With history itself at risk, the United States has formed the Time Enforcement Commission, a top-secret agency responsible for policing the temporal stream.
So Time Cop, which is based on a comic book from Dark Horse Comics, indeed I think it was co-written by the creator of Dark Horse Comics,
The founder of the actual company.
Yeah. And then he worked with an author, with a writer named Mark Verheiden, and together they worked on the screenplay for the film. Let me look up that gentleman's name, because I think he deserves the credit. It was a thingy that they did. Mike Richardson.
Mike Richardson, okay.
Mike Richardson and Mark Verheiden worked on a comic book. That comic book became a movie.
Now, the comic book was in 92.
Yeah.
And they turned it into a movie in 94. So it was like super fast turnaround as far as these things go.
Yeah, a good high concept, makes sense for a movie. Was directed by, I think it was Peter Hyams did the movie, right? I'm not crazy?
Oh, Did Peter Hyams do the
movie? Peter Hyams. Peter Hyams, good genre filmmaker, did a little bit of everything, mostly pretty good. He did 2010, The Year We Make Contact, the sequel to 2001.
I'm very fond of the monster movie he did called The Relic.
Yep.
Came out the same year as the Time Cop TV series.
He did a really cool sci-fi film in the 80s with Sean Connery called Outland, which is basically High Noon Outland, on a space station. That's a fun one.
I haven't seen Outland.
Yeah. He did Sudden Death, also starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, and that was Die Hard in a Hockey Rink, which is surprisingly good, that one, actually. I think it's actually one of the better Die Hard knockoffs. He did a really solid thriller in the 70s called Capricorn One, which actually co-stars O.J. Simpson, which is weird. But it's inspired by the idea that the Apollo moon landings were faked. And so the idea is we're going to send the first manned mission to Mars, and then we find out, like, seconds before the launch, it's not going to work scientifically. They can't make it happen. So they decide to fake it, and then the astronauts break out, and the government has to kill them to keep their secret. Good paranoid thriller, lots of fun. Peter Hyams makes pretty good movies, and he made a pretty good Jean-Claude Van Damme film called Time Cop, in which Jean-Claude Van Damme, in the very near future, is a police officer who is responsible for policing the time stream. Time travel has been invented. In order to go back in time, you need basically like a little mini roller coaster ride.
They call it a time sled.
Yeah.
It's just a little little seat. It's like a crash test dummy track.
Yeah.
And you run at a wall, and like lasers have to focus right on a spot and open up on like on a physical surface for you to burst through. And the sled goes in, but only you go through. The sled doesn't go all the way through with you.
Yeah.
The physics of this thing are completely
make no sense whatsoever. It looks kind of cool, but it makes no sense whatsoever.
You can't go to the future. They actually say this in the Time Cop movie. You can't go into the future because it hasn't happened yet. So if you're going to go into the future, you just cryogenically freeze yourself, I guess. But you can go into the past, and wouldn't you know it, some criminals have gotten a hold of some time travel equipment.
Yeah.
And they're going back in time to, like, the Civil War and stealing Confederate gold and stuff. They're just using it to get rich.
The majority of Time Cop takes place, like, within, like, 10 years of, like, when the movie takes place in the future, because someone's going back in time to, like, rig an election or something, and they have to kill Jean-Claude Van Damme's wife to get it.
And the bad guy is Ron Silver, if I recall.
It always pissed me off, this movie, because although it's well made, it's reasonably fun. Not a lot of great Jean-Claude Van Damme fights, per se, but it's not really a fight movie. My biggest problem was it had all of this potential. Jean-Claude Van Damme traveling through time, getting in adventures, and he never goes further back than the Great Depression. And that's really brief right at the beginning.
Except at the beginning where we get to see the Civil War era heist.
Fair enough, but Jean-Claude Van Damme isn't even there. No, that's just the bad guy there. And so
one of the conceits of the movie is if you go back in time and meet a past version of yourself.
Right.
Something about the fabric of the universe is upset by having the same matter occupying the same space.
Uh-huh.
So if you are to physically touch your alternate self,
like if you like high five, like, hey, good goal in high school earlier me, high five,
like,
boom.
For that moment, you're occupying the same space, and like a rend in space time will like sort of rip you apart and destroy you.
Which is important. Not really, doesn't really come up in the show very often, but it
comes up once when they can say it was hogwash.
Kinda, yeah. And so, my biggest problem with the movie was simply that as a relatively modestly budgeted 90s movie, you don't get to see, like, Jean-Claude Van Damme like roundhouse kick a velociraptor. I want to see Jean-Claude Van Damme versus velociraptors. Like, that's what I wanted as a kid. That's why I paid for a ticket to see it in theaters. Because I'm like, okay, you've got Jean-Claude Van Damme going back through time. How can he not fight dinosaurs? And it turns out, if you're cheap as hell, very easily.
Yeah.
And he's going to spend a lot of it, like, walking around his own house. So it's okay, but I always felt it never really lived up to its potential, and so the idea of doing it as a TV series, even on a limited television budget, at the very least opens the show up to a lot more possibilities. So on that note, that's a good idea. Let's do Time Cop the show. And in 1997, that is what we got. We got Time Cop the show. Jean-Claude Van Damme obviously did not come back, or you probably would have heard of it by now.
No actors return.
Nope.
And only, like, the chief... Like, the police chief character comes back, but he is played by a new actor.
Yeah, so the police chief is now played by Don Stark. You might remember him as the neighbor dad from that 70s show. But he plays Captain Eugene Matichak, who I like to think is named after the guy from the Ernst Lubitsch comedy Shop Around the Corner.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, not that that well, really like connects to the material in any meaningful way.
Screenwriters do that kind of stuff all the time.
But like, it's such a specific name.
Yeah.
You have to imagine.
In the movie, that character was played by Bruce McGill. Yeah. And now he's recast. Mm. The main time cop, not the Jean-Claude Van Damme character, is a guy named Jack Logan, played by Ted King. Or maybe it's Ted King, played by Jack Logan.
Yeah. At the time, he was credited as T.W. King. He's best known nowadays for his role in this TV series Charmed.
I think he was on one of the soaps, one of the big ones.
Let's see here. He was on Charmed. Yeah, he was on General Hospital from 2002 to 2007. He played Louis Alcazar and Lorenzo Alcazar. So I guess he got to play twins, which is awesome. That's what you want in a soap opera. Let's see here. He was on a run on Prison Break. He was in One Life to Live for a couple of years.
He was on The Bold and the Beautiful.
He's currently on The Bold and the Beautiful, apparently. So good for him.
So, you gotta admire the soap actors.
Yeah,
That steady, constant, difficult work.
Yep.
People make fun of soap acting because it's kind of like one note and melodramatic, but that's good work, man.
That is good work. It is hard to do. Never underestimate it.
Ted, I almost called him Ted Logan.
Yeah,
Ted Theodore Logan.
Hey, also time traveler.
Oh my god!
Oh, that's
I didn't
probably
even put that together.
Maybe that's why he's called Logan.
Because he's named after Ted Theodore Logan from Bill and
Weird
Ted.
Things have happened.
He is generic action hero guy.
Yeah.
He's like just sort of like a little bit flip, a little bit rough hewn, vaguely handsome in a TV kind of way.
Yeah. Not very interesting, but certainly a nice guy who does his job well.
Just like boilerplate hero character.
Yeah.
He's just
generic good guy.
All you need is an actor who can play that capably, and I think I think Ted Theodore Logan can do it just fine.
His not really his partner, but the person he works with the most is Officer Claire Hemmings. She's played by Christy Conaway. Christy Conaway eventually retired from acting to become a successful fashion designer, so good for them. But you'll probably remember them as the Ice Princess in Batman Returns.
The one who gets pushed off the roof.
The one who like is there, she was gonna like turn on the lights on the Christmas tree. I'm watching this, I'm like, what the fuck do I know her from? This is driving me up the wall. And Batman Returns is what I was thinking of. She was also in Doc Hollywood, and a bunch of other things in the 90s, and then again, retired for fashion design, good for them. That character, Claire Hemmings, is largely a tech person. She is responsible for doing, in the first episode, we see that she has invented a technology that can like give you all of a sudden like a lot of information about the year you're entering, so that if someone asks you, hey, what's the biggest movie of the year, you would know it, that kind of thing.
It's like the
local slang, that kind of deal.
It's the same learning device that you would see in Battlefield Earth, where they just sort of like plug your face into a thing and it puts all these random images in, and you don't feel like you're learning anything, but you can answer questions. This is a really wonderful device for a time travel cop division to have. It's called the SEC, the TEC.
The TEC, the Time Enforcement.
Time Enforcement Commission.
Yeah.
And the Time Enforcement Commission thinks ahead. They want to make sure the time cops are prepared.
Yeah.
You're thrown back in time, but you don't know where you're going to land. It's kind of like a random spot close to where they know a time ripple is
happening. It's kind of a recurring joke that it's almost always inconvenient. Like he's thrown in front of a car in the middle of a baseball game or something.
They know where they're going, and their first assignment is to find local clothing. Why is there not a gigantic wardrobe department as a part of the Time Enforcement Commission?
That makes no sense. That is a stupid idea.
There should have just been a character whose idea it was to research and make period clothing.
Yep. Or at the very least, you want to dovetail that together, which would have been a good opportunity for the other main character on the show, Dr. Dale Easter, played by wonderful character actor Kurt Fuller.
Kurt Fuller's great. I first saw Kurt Fuller in Wayne's World.
Yep.
Rob Lowe's assistant character.
Benjamin is no one's friend.
He would ice cream flavor, he'd be pralines and dick.
You might also remember from the TV show Supernatural. He was the mayor's aide in Ghostbusters 2. He was one of the sleazy executives in No Holds Barred. He has a regular role on that show Psych. So, really wonderful character actor. I'm totally in awe of him. I've always been a big fan. And his goal His role, sorry, in the show is to research time travel stuff.
He's the book learning guy. He has an archive. There's this, yeah. Actually, I like the set for the library because they go into this room and it's really tall and it's like just books up the side and he's just sort of wandering around with old magazines and
he's
stuff.
He's got old periodicals. And what I like about it is it's set in 2007. Obviously, the show was made 10 years prior, so they had no idea what the future was going
to
look
like.
They had no idea how computer technology would evolve. There's a funny gag where this person from 2007 goes back to the early 90s and has to hook up a computer. It's like, oh, they still have male-female adapters. And I'm looking at my computer like, yeah, we still do.
Maybe
I guess Bluetooth came up earlier because of time travel. I don't know.
His job is not just to provide information to the time cops and to do research on the historical period.
Yeah.
But that's the way the people who are going into the past can communicate with people in the present.
And this is actually pretty clever.
And they can place a newspaper ad.
Yeah.
And just sort of have that run for a day.
Yeah.
And the archivist can then look up something from, a century in the past, and it's still in that newspaper.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, okay, so this is a coded message. This means he needs us to do this in the present day. And I'm like, that's clever.
I love that kind of stuff.
That's really fun.
All the causality stuff is really fun. Doesn't make any sense? No, of course not. Causality works.
Time travel makes no sense whatsoever. How it basically works in this show is if someone, a criminal or someone, goes back in time and changes something in anything meaningful, anything that could have a ripple effect and affect history, in the future, the present, they have people in Minority Report chairs constantly looking up at this giant computer screen, just looking for time ripples. And the idea, I guess,
also a pretty cool set because... Yeah. It's not they're not on laptops the way they envision it. It's like something at Disneyland. It's this big round screen on the ceiling where the ripples are sort of emanating from the center and they can kind of pinpoint a time and place where these ripples are coming from. They don't explain the science of a ripple or what exactly it is what the problem with it is.
I think it's a bit who did The Sound of Thunder? Was that Ray Bradbury?
That was Peter Hyams.
No, the story. Oh.
Peter Hyams actually did the movie of A Sound of Thunder.
I know he did. It's a terrible movie, but the original story, I think, was Ray Bradbury, right?
Yes, I believe it was Ray
Bradbury. Okay, the idea of A Sound of Thunder is people go back in time to do things we know when this T-Rex is going to die, so we can sell safaris to people to go back in time and kill this T-Rex because that T-Rex is going to die anyway. It doesn't really matter how because it's going to get vaporized by a volcano or something anyway.
So none of that butterfly effect stuff.
But then something happens. Someone literally steps on a butterfly, and rather than change the future all at once, however, it changes the future in ripples, in a pond.
Mm.
And as a result, you have time to notice that time has been changed and potentially change it back. And that's how Time Cop works. We see that the ripple has been changed. We can tell, wait a minute, this person never won an Academy Award and now they did, or something like that. I know something is wrong, but this periodical from the era tells me otherwise. So we know that's what changed. We got to go back and fix it before time is irrevocably changed.
I saw a funny comic strip recently. The first panel was a butterfly flapping its wings. The second panel was a hurricane hitting a house. And the third panel was the butterfly going, ha ha ha, yes! That butterfly knows what it's doing.
My one gripe with the show is that, again, it is a low-budget show, and mostly they end up going back to, the 20th century again.
Well, they go back to what they have sets for.
Yeah.
This is an old Star Trek trick, I'm okay with it.
If it had gone on longer, hopefully we would have done more, but yeah.
If you're working with limited resources and you have a time travel show, I think this is fair play.
Right.
And if you're going to do something kind of clever and also appealingly dumb with this premise, then this is fine playground to work in.
What I was about to say is what I think they did, and I think they did reasonably well. Not every episode is good, but I think at some point they must have realized we can't really afford to throw money at this and make it look really, really cool. So we have to make sure that the ideas that we draw a story around are neat regardless of timeline.
Yes.
And we're going to start with the first episode, which is cool. It's a very cool idea for a character, for a story.
They need a good recognizable historical thing to catch you with.
Yeah, so we open with, it is the late 19th century, we're in Whitechapel, and a sex worker is being attacked by a maniac with a knife. Oh no, it's Jack the Ripper! Oh, man. Oh, and then we see, like, a guy with, like, night vision goggles there. It's like, oh, the time cop's
gonna... And a space gun.
Yeah. And if we think for a second, this is the idea, that we're gonna see a time cop catch Jack the Ripper, and that would be kind of neat. Like, we never caught Jack the Ripper, mm-hmm. so we can just pluck him out of the timeline or something. And then he kills Jack the Ripper, and then he kills the lady anyway, because now he's Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, she says, oh, no, oh, well, thank goodness you killed Jack the Ripper. And he says, ah, now I am the Jack the Ripper, and he kills her anyway.
Yeah, so basically, you're a copycat who can go back in time, kill the original, and be the person you want to be a copycat for. That's neat.
So yeah, hooray, what a cool idea.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks for victims, but like, as a story, that's a neat idea. We're doing something here.
Time cop has to go back in time, has to get an outfit. He lands above somebody's bed while they're sleeping in it.
We never really talked about
somebody's clothes, and ends up having to coordinate with Scotland Yard, mm-hmm. talk to other potential victims that who they know are going to die.
Yeah. And I wish they'd gone into a little bit more the idea, which, like, I can't save her.
Yeah.
Like, I would like to, but I can't. Like, that sort of Star Trek.
And that's something they said, is that we know she's going to die.
Yeah.
That's actually a matter of record. So, you know, if you have a chance to save her, don't do it, because that's what kind of ripples.
I realize that they mentioned that, but I kind of wish they had actually engaged with how difficult that would be.
Yeah,
like, there's a really good movie
Edith Keeler Syndrome.
Well, there's a movie I really like called Source Code. Which is about, I like him more than you do, but Jake Gyllenhaal plays like someone who's volunteered for a program to be part of a time travel thing where there is a major disaster on a train. A lot of people died. I don't want to spoil anything because the plot goes in weird directions. But what we know at the start is he's working for a time travel organization. He's allowed to go back in time and relive like the last 10 minutes before this train exploded.
They're sort of, what they've done is they've created like essentially an interactive video game about everything they know that happened in the past, and they're just sort of like shunting his consciousness into it.
Is it a video game or is it an alternate reality? And for him, it's real.
Yeah, well,
and so
he keeps trying to save
the day, and he finds out that he can't. But to him, it's real, and the movie really interrogates what that would be like to actually identify. These people aren't figures to him. To everyone else, they're numbers on a spreadsheet.
They're already dead.
Yeah, exactly. And what I like about that movie is the way that that movie, like, and it's basically a big 9/11 allegory where. Afterwards, I mean, it was horrible and a lot of people passed away and it really hurt, but like 10 years later, a lot of people look back and it was like, okay, those are statistics now. It's like, no. That was a horrifying thing and it needs to be constantly humanized.
Yeah.
And the hero cannot separate himself from that. Yeah. You can tell him there's nothing you can do to change the past, but he's living it and he can't unlive it. And so that's something that I feel like Time Cop maybe could have played with, is the idea that I can't change the past, but I still feel it because I'm here and I'm getting to know these people.
Yeah.
And I feel like that you could have gotten some more pathos out of that. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. The Time Cop isn't a terribly rich character, which is fine because we don't need him to be for this kind of a series.
Not really, no.
We need him to be a kind of a generic man of action, and I think he fulfills that role plenty fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the supporting cast where we get a lot of the crazy the quirky stuff. And we need sort of... I complain about this a lot. I've even called it protagonist syndrome, where you need and even Dickens wrote this way. You need a protagonist who is kind of a blank slate, so you can surround them with more interesting characters, and you can actually have much more complex incident if the main character themselves doesn't have a lot of character. That's a problem, because you're always stuck with a protagonist, and you're spending the most amount of time with the least interesting character in your story.
Mm-hmm. One could argue that even Batman is like this as well. He's very stoic. And he just, Batman is Batman in every single story, and it's the supervillains around him who are allowed to really go in interesting and weird places, where Batman has to stay in place.
In terms of a story, you need to sort of strike that balance. So that this guy is a little bit generic is okay, because you're throwing him back in time, and we have to do things like establish Jack the Ripper and all these other interesting characters. So he can sort of flippantly smile and say, like, a sort of quantum leap, here we go again kind of moment.
Yeah. The Jack the Ripper episode is a pretty good, pretty thrilling episode, all things considered. We get a fun supporting turn from an actor named William Morgan Shepherd as Inspector Wells, who has a nephew who likes this time travel stuff.
William Morgan Shepherd, who we just saw in Star Trek. He was from the episode The Schizoid Man. He was the one who put his consciousness...
I thought he looked familiar.
Yeah, that old man who put his consciousness in Data's body.
That's fun. So yeah, we talked about that in all our yesterdays. But the really neat thing here is the villain of the piece, the person who goes back in time to impersonate Jack the Ripper and go on with his kills, you would think that would be just like your villain of the week. He is not. He's their Lex Luthor. He's their Joker. Like, he's a guy who has, he's in the future. He's his name is, was it Ian Pasco?
Pasco, yeah.
Yeah, he's played by Tom O'Brien, who was in The Accused and The Big Easy. He was on Smallville for a while. Yeah, he at some point in the future for the Time Cop, this guy has access to time travel, and he has been using it for a while, and we're going to see at least two or three episodes with this guy, and we're going to see that not only has he been jumping around in time doing horrible crimes, he has been getting away with it for a while, and a lot of the things that we take for granted about history are because he did shit and didn't get caught. And that's a scary thought. And he actually eventually has a really creepy monologue where he's just like, you think you can catch me? Like, I watched Rome burn. I stood at the top of Mount Everest and saw the planet Earth die. Like, I have seen everything and done it all. And it's like, ooh, I just got chills. That's what a creepy villain. A guy who's like, ooh. Like, that's kind of cool. So we're going to sell a lot of him. He gets away in this episode, and then he comes back in the next episode. Now, here's the thing with Time Cop. The order of the episodes is a little wonky. Now, theoretically, we should we're going to go with the order that they're actually aired. But if you watch this show is currently on Tubi, and you can see almost all the episodes there. 9 episodes aired, but only 8 episodes are part of the official release on Tubi for whatever reason.
The second episode, for some reason, was not put on Tubi.
I don't know why.
Which meant we went from one Pasco episode right into the next.
Yeah, which is good for pacing purposes, but what's weird is that the second episode, you kind of could have put it anywhere, and yet you just didn't. You just didn't put it in there. And it's a shame because it's a pretty neat episode, actually. The second episode is called The Heist.
And this is the one with William Devane.
Yeah, William Devane is in this. And there's a bit at the beginning where someone robs, does a famous jewelry heist. And the idea is...
Back in the 70s, somebody did
this. Back in the 70s. Yeah. And for whatever reason, they never found out where the dude hid the jewels. It's become like this, like, urban legend, true crime. Who's that guy who jumped out of the airplane with all that money?
Oh, D.B. Cooper.
It's like this D.B. Cooper kind of mystery where, like, it never got resolved. So it's now decades later. That guy went to jail. That guy got out of jail. And then I guess he found himself a time sled and went back in time in order to get the jewels, basically. So the time cop has to team up with a detective who was on the case at the time and has now aged into William Devane. But when they go back in time, he's played by William Devane's son, Josh.
And they look alike.
They look quite a bit alike. For a minute, I was like, wow, the makeup on this show is great.
Well, I was going to say that's really good casting. They cast a guy who looks a lot like William Devane.
William Devane is a really great actor, by the way. Like, he doesn't get enough credit for it. He's done a lot of TV. He was on 24, most memorably.
His best movie is probably Rolling Thunder.
Rolling Thunder kicks ass.
It's a movie from the 70s. It also starred a young Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
And it's a coming home from Vietnam story. A veteran comes home from Vietnam, but he's clearly marked. He's suffering from PTSD.
He was a POW, and he was treated very, very badly. And he doesn't identify with his wife and child, but he does receive, as like, because he was an American hero, he receives this like really expensive set of gold coins.
It's a bunch of dollar coins.
And a bunch of greedy criminals, they break into his house. They kill his wife and kids, and they, like, cut off his hand.
They feed it into a garbage disposal.
And he teams up with his old war buddy, played by Tommy Lee Jones, to get revenge. It is so intense. Like, it's halfway to an exploitation film, but it's actually so thoughtful and so good about how William Devane treats his character. And, like, it's just, like... It's like half an Oscar movie and half a Grindhouse movie. Like, it's really fucking great. So I'm a huge William Devane fan, and he kills it here. So they go back in time.
Oh, I go, there's a great quote from William Devane.
Yeah.
About Robert Redford.
Okay.
I can't stand around like Redford. I'm not that narcissistic. Not that photogenic either.
They go back in time to try to prevent the guy from changing the future, blah, 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 blah. And there's a moment, I remember thinking this, there's a frustrating thing about the way that most TV shows in particular, but also movies, tend to treat police officers. And this is often in the wake of Miranda rights. The idea is that good cops are often stymied by bureaucracy, being forced to do the right thing or follow the law.
Yeah, so they have to play by their own rules and go off the road to get the bad guys.
Yeah, and it's morally justified because they're the, quote, good guy. But the problem with that is that this creates this idea in the audience's head, because we see it all the time in every cop show and every cop movie, that it's okay for a good cop to do bad things because cops are always right. Mm. But in actuality, in real life, if they were good cops, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't need to do that, and no actual good person would need to justify police brutality like that. So there's a bit in this episode where they go back in time, and our time cop is interrogating someone who's not going well, and then William Devane, playing the older version of the cop, like, hits the guy, basically, and he's saying, just like, it's the 70s, we didn't do... We didn't treat our suspects well. We just beat them up, which is like...
It's 77, and which I think Miranda rights were already in place.
It's too late for that, but my point is this. I'm watching this, and I'm going, oh, what a frustratingly immoral show. And then two scenes later, we see that when they find the guy, William Devane kicks the shit out of him, and he's going to steal the diamonds for himself. So that wasn't the show saying that that shit is moral. That was the show saying that that's bad guy does that.
That's what a villain does.
And I thought that was nicely handled. That was actually a good bit of writing.
I didn't think about that. That was actually really...
You think it's business as usual, but it's actually a red flag.
Yeah, the twist in the story is that William Devane is now going back in time to steal the diamonds for himself.
Yeah. And indeed, we start spending time with him as a younger man, and we realize that the aftermath of this, failed attempt to recover stolen evidence, and he was investigated, maybe he stole the diamonds.
Marked him and turned him into, like, a bitterer character.
Yeah, and that ended up ruining his marriage, and his life ended up basically sucking ever since. So you see that, like, here's how he turned into the bad guy he became. And then the dude actually, like, kidnaps his old wife in order to, like, force the time cop, and the time cop has to team up with the younger version of the bad guy to stop the older version of the bad guy. And I'm like, you know what, William Devane is acting the shit out of this. Everyone's doing a good job.
William Devane's son is acting the shit out of this.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good episode. It bums me out that we had to do, like, due diligence and find this outside the usual means, that this episode just isn't in the set.
Yeah.
That's a bummer, because it's a well-done episode.
It's out there.
You can find it online really easy, but like, it should be just on the official set.
I can't say why. It could have been one of those things where, like, one of the songs in the background wasn't licensed properly, so they weren't able to get the distribution rights just for that reason alone. Used a lot of like, contemporary pop in this show.
Yeah.
Which will come into play in the Al Capone episode, but we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, the next episode is the Golden Age of Hollywood episode.
Where we get to meet Barack Obama's mom.
Yeah, well, they, we do, actually.
They have to go back in time because a U.S. president wasn't elected president, according to the
44th president of the United States.
So they go back in time to... Hollywood in the 1950s, and it turns out the 44th president's mom was an aspiring actress in Hollywood, and they have to protect her from malfeasance.
Eventually, she'll marry a senator, and she'll be part of that world, and it'll all turn out okay. They also seem to have modeled her pretty directly after Lana Turner, because one of the first things we see is that she is dating, like, a hunky mafioso, and their relationship is destined to go bad, and he's clearly based off of Johnny Stampinato.
Yeah.
Johnny Stampinato, who's a real person, minor character in the L.A. Confidential.
Who worked for Mickey Cohen, who is the Al Capone of the West Coast, I guess.
Basically, yeah.
He was a big mob boss in Los Angeles.
And Johnny Stampinato was a very hunky mobster who was notoriously generously packaged. and he dated the movie stars.
He dated Lana Turner.
Yeah, and Boyd, and his story did not end well, if you want to look up that sucker.
The 50s detective that the time cop has to team up with is Cliff DeYoung.
I love Cliff DeYoung.
Who I know from Shock Treatment.
Yes! Shock Treatment is the sequel to the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Neither Barry Bostwick nor Susan Sarandon returned. They were replaced by Jessica Harper, who, I'm just going to say, bit of an upgrade, at least in terms of singing voice.
Oh my goodness.
Singing voice alone. Jessica Harper could sing.
You cannot compare those, because Susan Sarandon, she could sing. She just sang
not
in
like
a,
Jessica Harper.
She sang in a higher register. Jessica Harper had a better, very deep singing,
right? And she's a better singer. I'm not saying they have the same register. I'm saying she's a better singer. But Barry Bostwick was replaced by Cliff DeYoung, and Cliff DeYoung is a fun actor.
Well, and Shock Treatment's such a bizarre film because he ends up playing two different roles.
He
in
plays
that
like
movie.
The villain and the hero, and there's like the long lost twins, and yeah, he's such a good character actor. Just dips into hero and villain roles really, really easily.
Here he's just playing like generic detective guy.
They have he ends up like because he's going back in time and solving crimes. He ends up dealing with the local law a lot. Mm. So it's pretty much just a gift to any like character actor who's available this week to play the 1950s cop or the 1970s cop or the 1800s cop. But the other cute bit that I noticed here, and I assume this was okay. I don't think they stole this. I assume like they got the okay with this. But at the beginning of the episode, they're at the premiere of a fancy movie, and they're at a new film starring Don Lockwood and Lena Lamont.
Who are they? So it takes place within the universe of Singin' in the Rain.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, and this is the part where it pisses me off. Singin' in the Rain took place in, like, the 1920s.
Yes.
This episode of Time Cop takes place in the 1950s, and they're going to the premiere of The Royal Rascal, which is a silent movie they made together. So we messed this up. It could be a remake, you know, but I doubt they'd bring him back.
Ripples in the timeline.
Must be ripples in the timeline.
Something weird
happened. Only justification for it. But anyway, it turns out there's someone who's been stalking this lady and...
Proper creepy kind of...
Yeah, like the bodyguard kind of vibe. Yeah.
Photos up on the wall kind of thing.
And the time cop has to stop them. And it turns out it's Pasco again because now he's like obsessed with killing a movie star. That's like the thing he wants to do this week.
I was a little bummed out that it was Pasco.
Yeah.
Especially because I saw the Pasco episodes all in a row. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the heist in between. I actually watched the heist later on.
It looks for a while like it's just going to be the Pasco show.
Yeah.
There's four episodes almost in a row.
I've mentioned this before. In the second of the Harry Potter films, we learn, there's this, the Chamber of Secrets, and there's all these mysteries, and
there's this
big
school,
snake, and we don't know what the mysteries are, and Harry Potter's investigating, and he finally makes it into the Chamber of Secrets at the end of the movie, and it's revealed that there was a bad guy at the heart of this the whole time, this guy named Tom Riddle. But then it's revealed that Tom Riddle is actually just...
like a younger version
of version of Lord Voldemort, who was the bad guy from the first movie. It's like, oh, well, that's...
again with this shit?
And I was kind of hoping that the movies... because I hadn't read the books.
Yeah, we have a different villain each time.
Yeah, some different mysterious villain each time. And it was kind of upsetting to learn that
He wasn't in the third one. Voldemort wasn't in the third one.
But wasn't he part of it? Didn't they mention him a lot?
Yeah, but it's because of the backstory. But Voldemort himself wasn't the main bad guy. Everyone thought it was Sirius Black, but it was actually Wormtongue.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so, anyway. But you're right. I'm with you on this. And especially when you're doing a serialized television series, keep using the same villain over and over again. Also, you can build more villains.
Serialized. This is a great opportunity for a rogues gallery of some kind. If you're going to have a colorful villain each week, do that. Or if you're going to just have generic criminal guy every week, that's fine, too. Mm-hmm. They don't all have to be big characters. In fact, that's going to be the case when we get to the boat episode. It's like, those are just generic dudes.
Agreed.
But I like when he teams up with local law enforcement. My favorite team up with local law enforcement was from episode 4 because he goes back in time to the 1920s. Ian Pasco goes back in
1920s. Oh, yeah, this one's fun.
And Ian Pasco, it turns out, already knows Al Capone. They have an established relationship.
In fact, Al Capone wasn't part of history until Ian Pasco went back in time and installed him as the crime boss of Chicago, which is fun because basically we're introduced to Al Capone. And we see Al Capone, he's doing his dominant, all those Al Capone stories you've heard. He's basically playing him like Robert De Niro did in The Untouchables, which is fine. And then Ian Pasco shows up, and Al Capone's like, yes, sir.
Yeah, he's like really deferent to this guy.
Yeah.
And Time Cop has to hook up with the local law enforcement, who is, of course, Elliot Ness.
Yay!
A young Elliot Ness played by Ron Livingston from Office Space.
Yeah, so that was actually a pretty good get at the time.
In order to establish that this is the 20s, they played like, authentic music, but it was Squirrel Nut Zippers, which is contemporary at the time. They played the song "It Ain't You."
I'll let it go,
which I completely recognize.
Yeah, I like the Al Capone episode. I like that the main bad guy is someone they also can't touch because of the timeline. So he's like
literally untouchable.
Yeah, and so this is the episode where we get that great speech from Pasco. It turns out Pasco has a piece of future tech, which is like a superior time travel device than to anything they have, and he's got to get it back because they like stole it from him in a previous episode. All that stuff is cool.
Yeah.
All of that stuff is cool. All the Elliot Ness stuff is fun. Basically, the time cop ends up taking up the Sean Connery role from The Untouchables, where he has to teach this naive Elliot Ness, like, how to actually be a good cop.
Yeah.
Which is a little silly, but it's fun. And
oh, it's fun.
It's so much fun. Again, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with all of it, honestly.
You said it really perfectly earlier. It's the perfect balance between clever ideas and, like, complete stupidity.
Yeah.
And somehow they managed to razor ride that line.
Yeah.
Right down the middle.
There's something they introduce here, which is kind of interesting. The idea that because Pasco is a villain from the future, in the present day, in 2007 in the show, he's 13.
That's right.
So, like, and I wish that we'd actually gone on long enough to maybe, like, meet the 13-year-old Pasco, because it turns out he was actually apprehended at the end of the last episode, but he breaks out in this one with the help of his 13-year-old self.
Yeah.
Which is really neat. And I want this, like, 13-year-old Hannibal Lecter type.
You have the same character, just the younger actor.
That'd be cool, right? I kind of want to see. We never got that. Or if we did, there were 13 episodes. I think 13 or 15 shot, but only 9 ever aired.
Yeah.
So we only watched the 9.
That's all that we ever saw.
The next episode is called Rocket Science, which is the obligatory Nazi episode.
I'm surprised that they're restrained. They waited until episode 5.
Well, and I have a theory about this one.
And here's something I appreciate. No Civil War. Until later.
And even then, really, really briefly.
Yeah, and then it's only like a prologue. We don't have to go back and do the Confederacy crap.
Yeah.
But of course we have to do the Nazi crap.
Yeah. So some mad scientist has gone back in time in order to give the nuclear bomb to the Nazis, which of course would completely blow up all of history. So they have to go back and stop.
I love the opening scene of this episode where it's all the Nazi high command are all gathered in a little Nazi office and this, like, goth dude with an earring and sneakers comes in with an IBM laptop and flips it open. It's like, hey, Hitler, here's some nuclear codes.
It's so fucking awful. This episode is weird because it does something rather odd, and I think I know...
It tricks you a little bit, because there's a fake-out as to who the villain is.
Well, there is a fake-out as to who the villain is, but I'm actually not even talking about
Hitler's the villain. He's actually the villain, but
of course, Hitler's the villain. But the person who goes back in time, there is a fake-out, and that's handled well. But there is a different thing here, where we meet a new character, played, I believe, by Allison Rice... her character's name is Amy Fuller, she is playing the role that is normally played by Christy Conaway. They come up with some weird dialogue to say that, like, she's away for a while, and this new character is her replacement. And I was like, oh, did we lose the actor, and this is going to be the new star? Mm. She's here for only one episode.
Yeah, which... It's odd. I'm guessing Christy Conaway wasn't available that week.
Maybe,
or
but
just
I have,
shooting something else.
I have a theory. I have nothing to substantiate this theory, but it's something that we've seen before. Because of the way that this story works, the idea is the time cop goes back in time. He figures out, okay, this weird goth guy with the earring has given nuclear bomb technology to the Nazis. I'm going to go back in time. He kills that guy and then goes back in time thinking, okay, I solved everything. But when he comes back, the Nazis won World War II, and this new character, Amy, is now dressed as a Nazi. She's a bad guy. She points to him. Like, it's almost like the end of, like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. She's like, ah! And he's like, oh, shit! And he has to jump back in the time slide and figure out what went wrong. And it turns out the guy who was dressed up like a modern, like, neo-Nazi was a decoy to fool a time cop. So a time cop would assume, well, that guy's clearly not from here. And so there was actually another guy who was actually there. And that's clever misdirect.
Yeah.
But my theory is that maybe, and this is just, I have nothing to substantiate this, I couldn't find any corroborating information. Maybe Christy Conaway didn't want to dress as a Nazi.
That's possible.
When we saw this in, is the episode called Patterns of Force, the Star Trek episode?
Yeah, the Nazi episode.
So, and on our show, All Our Yesterdays, on our Patreon, we cover every single episode of Star Trek ever, and there's this one episode of the original Star Trek series called Patterns of Force, and the idea is...
It's an insanely tasteless episode.
It's awful. It's one of the worst episodes of television ever. And the idea is that someone has gone to a pre-space technology planet. People just happen to look human, whatever, with Star Trek. There was a lot of cheap episodes like that where the aliens all just happen to look human. But the idea was they installed Nazi rhetoric style and indeed government onto this planet against flying in the face of everything Starfleet believes in.
This guy from Starfleet became really enamored of Nazism and decided to install it on this primitive planet.
And they go to this planet. Kirk and Spock have to dress up as Nazis. There's a young actress who plays like a Nazi, but she's actually like working undercover to take them down. There's a horrible line of dialogue where Spock talks about how the Nazis were evil, but they were impressively efficient, which is A, not historically accurate, and B, fucked up, and C, in real life, both Spock and Kirk were Jewish.
Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner are both Jewish.
Leonard Nimoy refused to be photographed in his costume, and indeed, the woman who played the one-off character, who is the underground resistance fighter who has the dress as a Nazi, didn't know that that was part of the character and quickly left the industry afterwards because she was Jewish, her family like escaped the Holocaust, and that was absolutely horrifying.
That was like 67, so it was a little fresher.
So if, theoretically, Christy Conway, who is like one of the only characters, Time Cop has the dress as a Nazi, it's part of the plot, Christy Conway might have said, I'm not fucking dressing like a Nazi. And if that's what she did, good for her.
Stand up for yourself.
Good for her. And if that's not it, and it was some banal thing, maybe, but it's weird that this was the episode, and that's the only thing I can think of. Because if that's the case, seriously, good for you, because you don't have to fucking do that.
I think by the time we got to Time Cop in the late 90s, Nazis had become kind of generic movie villains at that point. Yeah. I mean, there were still a lot of penetrating dramas about World War II and about
we were getting Schindler's
the
horrors
List of that, that time. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, the same filmmaker also made Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Hitler is in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and it's played off as a joke.
There's a really huge difference between the way that Nazis are portrayed in Schindler's List and Indiana Jones going, Nazis.
I hate these guys.
Yeah, it was like, you're kind of downplaying the evil of Nazis there, a smidge. You know?
What I appreciate about Raiders of the Lost Ark is that the thing that kills the Nazis is a Jewish artifact.
Yeah, and also God.
Yeah, God hates Nazis. God will kill the Nazis.
Which is also great. But in any case, so Nazis are often treated in popular culture as just kind of generic villains because the idea is we all agree that they're awful, which... fair enough, but also at the same time, after a while, we're not really doing justice and really reminding people of the absolute atrocities that were committed by them.
If they
and we're kind of just kind of underplaying it a little bit, and you kind of get used to them being around, and that's not healthy.
Movie villains are actually a lot easier to palate than what the Nazis actually did.
So I
can understand why a lot of actors would be cavalier about putting on a Nazi uniform and playing a bad guy in a TV show or a movie. Because
look, I get it, you know,
they're just villains at that
point. And indeed, if you want to tell a story about even the horrors of World War II, someone's got to play the Nazis. I get that. But in a show like Time Cop, where we're just kind of throwing it out there, and if you maybe it's tasteless... I'm not going to fight you too hard on that. I think there's a fair argument that it is. It all ends okay. The Time Cop prevents the Nazis from getting the bomb and everything.
I appreciated the villain twist, though, because it looks like the villain was like this sort of like hipster young guy from the future. And it turns out it was like an assistant character who's like sort of hiding off to the side, who's actually pulling the strings from behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah, and like, and the guy who was clearly out of time was just there so that a Time Cop would assume that was the main bad guy. Yeah. That was clever. The next episode...
it's not just time travel, but they're doing some interesting villain work as
And doing villain work that only works with the Time Cop show. Like, it wouldn't make sense in another program. So that's that is a bit of clever writing, I'll admit that. The next episode is called Alternate World.
And, you knew this one was coming. Somebody goes back into Time Cop's own past and mucks around with his past to try to get him to follow a different path and be disbarred in the present.
Yeah.
And so we get to go back to Time Cop's past in
1989. Yeah. Good old days.
It doesn't look any different from
1997. No, it doesn't.
They didn't go out of their way to make it look like 89.
What do they have? Like, there's a fake movie in the movie theater called, like, Time Invaders or something. It's, like, clearly supposed to be, like, Time Pirates.
It was supposed to be Time Cop.
Yeah, but I think it was supposed to be Time Bandits. But I think they decided to just change it up. It looks really ridiculous. But, yeah, the idea is someone's gone back in time to try to kill the young Time Cop.
Wait a minute. Time Cop is a Universal film. This is a Universal program. Back to the Future is also a Universal property. They probably could have gone back in time to when Back to the Future Part 2 came out, because that was 89, right? 89, 90, around there?
I feel like, I think 89 was Back to the Future Part 2 and 90 was Part 3,
So you just go back in time and watch Back to the Future Part 2. Make it cute.
You might have to get, there might be reasons, there might not, I don't know. It might just not have been worth the bother.
I suppose not.
Yeah. Nowadays, you probably go to all the bother, but in the '90s, they probably didn't think anyone cared that much.
Young Time Cop. We get to see a rigmarole with prom and shit.
Yeah. The whole idea is
Winding Road. My prom theme.
The idea is he's not supposed to go back in time to a time and place where he existed because it's just too much of a risk. Mm-hmm. But his argument was, but on my prom, I stole a car to pick up my date, and I ended up spending the whole night in prison. So I'm in prison that whole time. As long as I don't go to prison, I'm not going to fuck anything up. Mm. But it turns out that someone had already changed the timeline and he wasn't in prison, and I was wandering around this very small town, running into himself.
Yeah.
Which is could be fun. Great episode, but there's fun stuff that could happen there.
The fun stuff is when he goes back to the present and he's not trusted because he's a criminal now. He's been framed and now everybody's in pursuit of him. And that's, they changed the timeline that way. I like that stuff. I think that stuff is pretty fun.
And it's a sort of thing where it's they come back in time and he's the guy who's trying to kill him is actually now the top time cop. And he's like, yes, I've caught our number one most wanted fugitive, regular time cop. And the guy's like, no, wait, the past changed. And everyone's like, ha ha ha, that could ever happen. And I'm like, that could happen all the time.
Well,
there's got to be
big screen on the ceiling and say, look!
There's got to be some kind of protocol for that kind of thing where it's like someone's hey, listen, I think an alternate reality has been created or something. And they'd be like, how do we, there must be a way to test for that. You'd think, or they'd put him under a polygraph at least or something, right? There must be something to do because you can't pretend that's not possible.
I wish... I never saw the Loki TV series, because I know this is a conceit with the Loki TV show, is that time is, splitting off into all these different dimensions all the time, and there's this organization that's trying to keep it streamlined.
Yeah, anytime there's this one correct timeline that is being managed by someone, in the distant future, and he's created this time bureau to make sure that any deviation from that timeline, someone who goes off script in history... that is undone, and that any of that branching timeline that would be created is pruned out.
Yeah, I'm given the nature of the MCU, which the Loki series is part of.
Yeah.
There's probably not a lot of deep science talk as to how the causality works and the nature of time and all that.
Kind of is, actually.
Oh, there is. Okay,
there's more than you might think. I mean, it's not like all time travel. It's not that well thought out. I'm sure it's
this is also a show with alligator.
Basically,
Loki,
it exists to explain why before the Loki show, the multiverse was possible but didn't exist, and after the Loki show, all of a sudden, all of those branching timelines exist all simultaneously.
Oh, okay.
So it didn't. There only used to be one timeline, and now there's a million of them.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. I know they did that in Star Trek plenty of times. They didn't. It wasn't until Deep Space Nine that they introduced the Time Bureau in Star Trek, where there's so much time travel in that show and throughout all the movies, they had to create this organization to sort of keep tabs on stuff. I remember in that episode they brought up Kirk's name and they just sort of rolled over, Kirk, what a menace!
Yeah.
Went back in time all the time.
Yeah, you can't do that.
I would love to see a really heady, complicated sort of rundown as to how time travel, causality really worked. But, in a show like Time Cop. Cop's not a smart enough show to tackle that kind of thing.
I think they have...
But they would at least pay it lip service.
I think they have a general sense... I don't think... Here's the deal. Time Cop is a network television show in the late 90s.
Hmm.
I don't think they think their target demographic cares that much. I think that they're trying to find the sweet spot between nerds, super nerds, who will ask these questions at conventions someday, and casual, cop show fans who just want to see a cop show with a twist and don't want to get too caught up in the weeds on all the nerdy shit all the time. Because there's definitely a section of the audience you're going to lose if you have Dr. Easter go on a 5-minute rant about how the timeline works. So I think they're trying, and again, we're trying to find that sweet spot between genuinely clever and really stupid. For example, we're about to have the Titanic episode.
It's technically not the Titanic.
But it's the Titanic.
They could have. Yeah. But this is the same year as James Cameron's movie was set to come out. Mm-hmm. I think it's predates the release of James Cameron's movie.
It no.
Delayed.
No, it was 90. No, because
this
was late
97.
This is 98.
Oh, the
Lost Voyage ended up coming out in 98.
Okay, so it was shortly after Titanic.
Yeah. Clearly timed for, you know, it to actually, like, connect.
Yeah. But you can't say Titanic otherwise. People say, oh, that's just a knockoff. We're going to say it's a knockoff anyway. And this is one where Time Cop isn't the main character, really.
Not really, no. In fact, actually, it's Claire, who it turns out her Claire's grandmother.
Episode, yeah.
Basically, there's a ship called, what was it, the Empress of the Sea?
Yeah.
And it's basically Titanic. It crashed. It's all very tragic. Claire's grandmother was on it. And so she knows all about it. And so even though there's a potential risk of changing her timeline, she's the resident expert in the thing. So she goes back in time with Time Cop to prevent a potential disaster from time-traveling criminals who take over the ship Die Hard style, send it on a different course, and plan to blow it up. And the idea is the Titanic or the Empress of the Sea or whatever, it was shortly before the war broke out. And there was a millionaire, billionaire, whatever, an entrepreneur who was secretly squirreling all of his gold bullion out of Europe. And so if they sink the ship in a place where they know they can get at it in the future, forcing them to change its course, then in the future, they can get salvage rights and just dig it up and get all that gold.
Clever.
Actually, pretty clever. Yeah. Like, it's a lot. Like, it's a tall order, but, like, it's actually, like, kind of a neat idea for a story. And so we get Die Hard on Titanic, which you just don't get that often. Even Speed 2 Cruise Control. It's like, if it was Titanic, you've got something.
Yeah. I love the grandmother character.
She's cool.
Clara gets to meet her grandmother, and her grandmother is
fucking awesome.
She's just like sassy and stands up to
people.
She's
like Agent Carter from the MCU. She's just a total badass.
And, you know, of course, Claire's experience with her grandmother was she met her grandmother when she was an older woman, and she was like a lot calmer and it was sort of like a baking cookies kind of grandma.
She'd settled down. She'd settled down, yeah.
So she actually had this, like, really cathartic moment talking to her grandmother and sort of getting to know what an interesting, exciting person she was. So there's actually a lot of scenes with the grandmother.
Yeah. And that adds an actual human element to this story, which otherwise just would have been a neat one-off episode.
And she's actually the one who puts the villain in his place.
Yeah.
He says something about, you know, all of these. He makes some sort of crack about class. And the grandmother character gets to sort of take him to task for that.
Yeah, and her grandmother, by the way, is played by Melora Hardin, who would go on to star in The Office and Monk and Transparent. So she's had
a long interesting
career. So, you know, I don't know if she was, like, anyone of note yet, but either way, good get. So that was a pretty cool episode. The next episode is called DOA, and it opens with Time Cop. I was like thinking his name is Time Cop, by the way.
Jack Time Cop.
Time Cop and his boss, Matichek, are killed. They get in a car together to, like, because his boss's, like, car is in the shop. He's going to drive him home. And they are killed. Someone shoots a rocket launcher, like, into their car. And they just blow up. And then Dr. Easter and Claire are just like, well, this is horrible. And Dr. Easter's just like, yep. Get in the sled.
Yeah.
And she's like, we're not supposed to do that. It's like, yeah, but we're gonna. And she's like, okay, fine. So they go back in time
earlier that day.
Because they need to make the tiniest ripple possible. Yeah. They can't affect too much. And she goes out. She tells him, like, okay, listen, at the end of the day, you're going to be murdered. We know very little because we just popped in the Time Cop machine immediately.
Wonderful scene where she looks through the shades at her, the window blinds at herself in the opposite office. It's like that look, see me.
Yeah.
I'm here from the future.
Yeah.
Like the end of the day.
And, but what I like about it is Time Cop immediately is like, okay, I have 6 hours to solve my own murder. He tries to find the most likely suspect. It's a guy who was recently paroled that he put away for time crimes. He arrests him. He has no actual reason to. And so his boss is like, you can't just arrest that guy for nothing. That's bad Time Copping. You can't do that. At which point Time Cop says, we're going to die in 6 hours. And this is a whole thing. And Time Cop's boss is like, shit. And I do like how they talk about how we have to do this as discreetly as possible, because if we change too much right now, we could just end up dying later tonight or in a different way, and we can't even prevent the death we're trying to avoid. So we have to be very, very careful not to let on that we know, not to change our like our schedule too much or anything. It turns out it's the daughter of someone his boss put away, who's all pissed off. And she tried to
hired an assassin
to kill him, and so they had to fight him off and everything like that. But it's the only episode where we really get to know Time Cop's boss at all, and we find out that he's like a little estranged from his son because of a divorce. And you know, it's not Shakespeare. It's not even As the World Turns, but it's at least something we get a sense of his character.
We're on episode 8 of the show. It's still really early in the show, and what Time Cop has been doing has been giving every character their due. It's not just the Time Cop show. It's actually about the whole team. It's a little bit more of an ensemble, and I appreciate that. Yeah. This is the first episode where they started, and I'm guessing this was an X-Files note from the studio saying there needs to be a will they, won't they sexual tension between Time Cop and Claire.
Well, the one thing is we skipped past it, but in Alternate World, when he's in the alternate version of the future where he's a fugitive, he kidnaps Claire, convinces Claire that he's a good Time Cop for another reality, and they have sex.
Yeah.
But when he comes back to the reality of it, they don't have that connection anymore. Mm. And indeed, at the end of this episode, when the timeline changes, at the beginning of the episode, he and Claire are supposed to go on their first date together.
Exactly.
And at the end, because of all the shit that happens, they end up not doing that. Mm. So it's a little tragic, isn't it?
I always get impatient when they try to develop romances in workplace shows.
Impatient as in you want them to just get down to it and get to the romance, or just not bother?
Not bother. I find their dynamic to be a lot more interesting when they are friends and coworkers.
Yeah.
And how they learn to work really well together. I feel like romance, it's sort of like killing off a main character. Mm. It's a clear sign that the writers don't have very good ideas.
See, I used to think that way.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the case. I'm not going to dispute that. But what I wish they would do more I remember, speaking of As the World Turns, I used to watch As the World Turns a lot with my mom. It was her show, and I got really, really into it. And one thing that I noticed on As the World Turns, it was a daily one-hour soap opera. A lot of time to fill, a lot of characters. They would tend to do this, like, one ongoing, like, they would cut between four different storylines. And every week, you'd be, like, one storyline. But it would only move forward so much, because theoretically, someone could miss a Tuesday episode, and you don't want to get so far behind on the show to never watch it again.
Hmm.
So Thursday, if you miss Tuesday but you watch Wednesday, they haven't moved forward so much you can't follow along. So there's only so much movement that can happen at any time. And at any given time, there are always like three storylines where like someone's trying to keep a secret, and we're just waiting for that secret to boil over and for the big secret to be revealed. At some point in the writer's room on As the World Turns, on the turn of the century, 99, 2000, somewhere around there, there must have been some kind of fucking revolution. Because all of a sudden, storylines went quick.
Okay.
Where someone would be like, oh my god, I can't believe I kissed my boss.
You know what happened was TiVo. People could tape episodes and catch up.
So what happened was, like, all of a sudden it was like, oh no, I kissed my boss, I could never tell Holden. And normally there would be like 3, 4, even 5 weeks of milking that. What happened? Next episode you told Holden.
Wow.
Oh, shit. And the story wasn't hurt. It just moved faster. You don't need that all the time. So what I am sick and tired of in a lot of TV, and still to this day, is that will they, won't they romance. Here's what I would like to see happen at least more often. Not every time. It would just get just as stale. Let's say you have two characters, they're played by hunky, attractive actors, and they have some sexual chemistry, and you want to capitalize on it. Once they acknowledge they have sexual chemistry, they go out on a date. And then they date for a while. And then it either works or it doesn't. And then if they break up, then you've got that breakup tension, which makes it fun. Or if they're together, guess what? People don't stop being interesting when they're in a relationship. If it's a good relationship between people with strong personalities, you'll get the same banter. You will get the same tension. It will just change a little, and that's okay.
Here's
hooking up doesn't make you suddenly boring.
Or I would like to see this. They're coworkers, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to be in the office every day. How about this? They're attracted to each other. They hook up. And then they're just friends again after.
Yeah, that would also be fine.
And they don't need to keep on pursuing this weird sort of romantic tension.
It's they got out of their systems. It's like, this is cool.
Together. That was fun. We're friends. Let's just keep on being friends.
That could also be fine. My point is this. Going back to the same tired well. Mm. Will there, won't they? And then we'll finally let them get back together in the final episode after some false starts. Or like, oh no, I'm finally free from my horrible relationship. I can finally date Claire. Oh no, I'm one day too late. Claire accepted that marriage proposal. Oh, and now we have to wait a whole fucking season for that to fizzle out. And then it turns out Claire gets arrested in time jail. Mm. And now we're fucking... Like, it's always the fucking delay. It's arbitrary. It's annoying. What if you just let it move forward and saw what happened? That would be so quietly revolutionary. It would blow people's minds. And you could just move on with the story.
I think by now there have been plenty of exceptions to the rule.
Not as many as I'd like.
I just wish that they would start with they won't. In the will they, won't they question. And have their relationship develop that way. The reason I complain about this is because there are so few stories about coworkers who have a lot of like romantic or sexual tension,
uh-huh.
and it's about their friendship, and about how they aren't interested in dating each other.
Yeah,
even if there is some romantic or sexual tension, they're both attractive people.
Yeah,
you can be maybe attracted to a friend and say to their face, "I think you're really attractive." And just keep on being friends with that person.
It is okay. You can have a healthy kind of
depicting that kind of relationship, I think, would be a lot more interesting. And I think it's healthy. I think it's true to life.
I think it would be nice to have more of that. I agree. Yeah. If they had gone that direction, I would have been happy too.
I was a little bit kind of rolling my eyes a bit when they're trying to set up, especially this early in the show, this romantic tension between Claire and Mr. Tanaka.
I guess I'm just sick of the idea that people in a relationship are inherently less interesting than people who aren't. It's a cliche.
That's an old writing cliche.
It's an old writing cliche, and I'm sorry, I question how many successful relationships you've been in if you consider being in a relationship synonymous with being boring.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't have to be. A really good example of this is a show that's currently on the air. I'm behind on it, but I love what I've seen so far, Superman and Lois. Superman and Lois, it skips past the whole, we're at the Daily Bugle, you don't know my secret identity shit. They're married and they have two teenage kids.
Hmm.
They're really interesting. The family dynamic is really interesting. Their marriage is really interesting. It doesn't prevent him from being Superman. It just creates different kinds of problems surrounding it. It's a really great show. Mm. It's like my favorite version of Superman in a really long time because it's about the relationship.
Well, I think...
You can have a relationship and make it be interesting.
And this is going off in the weeds a little bit.
Yeah, we should get back on topic in a minute.
Just for a minute. The reason a lot of shows are written that way is... A lot of shows, and this is still true in Hollywood to this day, try to court a younger audience. Somebody who has a lot more free time and disposable income, presumably. Sure. And a lot of younger people aren't married yet. They're still single. And I think the idea is the default audience for most mainstream entertainments are young single people.
Yeah.
So the idea of depicting people in relationships is... parents. That's what your parents are doing.
I guess.
I think that's why we tend to see so many stories about people entering relationships and not people maintaining them.
Because they're
trying to reflect the life experience of the people in the audience, and their assumption is that the people that are watching are single.
Well, I appreciate that, and that makes a certain amount of sense to have that perspective. My two counterpoints is that if we consistently show being in a relationship as not something normal or positive, then we're just kind of presenting that idea, and that's unhealthy.
It's seen as the end of the story. It's the happily ever after thing.
But people's lives continue, and you don't want people to equate finding a positive relationship, if that's what you want, to be with the end of your story. That could be the beginning of your story, and I think we're missing out on a lot of dramatic possibilities from that. My other counter-argument is this. The idea is a lot of our audience is young, and we need to make sure that we reflect their reality. Also, most of our audience is time cops. At some level, we're accepting that they can handle shit that doesn't happen to them in real life. But I digress, and we should move on. The final episode that aired of Time Cop... is, huzzah, The Bruce Campbell episode.
Oh, God. Okay. Skipping ahead a little bit. I do like this show a lot. It's so my jam.
It's very you. I remember watching this. Going, Whitney's going to love this.
It's this type of writing, this type of tone. Even the corny, awful opening theme song.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. The production design is so fucking 90s. It makes me want to slap myself.
Yeah. The cop outfit is the dumbest looking shit, where they have this like big like oversized leather vest over like a gray sweatshirt.
Everyone's name is embroidered over their heart like their mom did it. I'm like, what?
But it turns out Time Cop has a friend, and I think he's his ex-partner, played by Bruce Campbell. And they have to go back in time because Bruce Campbell has become involved in this, it's like a stock scheme of some kind. This wicked billionaire is trying to manipulate stocks to make himself even richer in the future.
I honestly feel like the way this episode opens makes me feel like it was probably like should have been the pilot. Because it opens with the Time Cop seemingly has a partner. Makes sense. You might want a partner. They're in the Civil War. They prevent modern white supremacists from killing Ulysses S. Grant. Which, fine. You can do that in a field and a tent and a couple of costumes.
Also, I appreciate that we're not getting the what if the Confederacy won the Civil War.
No one wants that
timeline
shit.
Because that happens like in a lot of time travel.
And it's
shows.
Really it leads to a lot of gross possibilities. Mm-hmm. We don't want to fucking why. Also, so would the Nazi thing, but we only saw that reality for like 2 minutes in a room. I don't want to see the actual reality of that. It would have been horrifying, but.
I'm not going to say they did it tastefully or tactfully, but...
At least they did it quick.
It's a pulpy adventure kind of show, so I'm okay with the way they handled it.
I think mostly okay, but in any case, that's just the prologue. And then, it turns out they're actually having some tech problems at the TEC. Their time travel devices aren't working properly, and it may be because someone has gone back in time and sabotaged the company that provides them with their tech. So they have to go back in time to the early 1990s at the start of the TEC. They go back in time to the building. It's before it has actually been hooked up as the TEC, so it's just basically a sled and some computers. Bruce Campbell is a fuck-around kind of guy, so he jumps...
If you'll notice, it's the TEC from the movie.
Yeah.
Because they changed the design for the TV show. The sleds are like enclosed things now. They have two seats, so two people can go back in time. They built a TV set. When they go into the previous TEC stuff, I think it might have even been the old movie set.
That would be cool if that was the case.
Or maybe they still had some props left around.
Or they just tried to recreate it. That's clever.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell was fucking around. He gets in the old time sled. Everything boots up suddenly, and he is lost in the time stream. And so
he's essentially dead.
So they spend like half the episode trying to figure out how Bruce Campbell died, what is behind this conspiracy, and then eventually they realize that Bruce Campbell is actually more of a cad than they realized, and he is embarking on a scheme to basically go back in time and buy stock in early time machine shit long before anyone knew it existed, so that he could become a billionaire.
Which, that's...
Pretty
seems,
obvious
seems like
way
a
to
victimless
use...
crime, but, it's clearly not honest.
Well, they actually have a good conversation with that. Like, the boss and Easter are talking about how... Yeah, okay, it might not seem like a big deal, but when you think about it, like, the Treaty of Versailles was just a sheet of paper, right? Mm. Who controls time travel parts could potentially have a gigantic effect on the history in the future.
And also consider that cash is a limited resource. There's a lot of it, but, it's not infinite, so... A billionaire hoarding a bunch of wealth is going to affect a lot around him.
The billionaire in question in this episode, whose livelihood Bruce Campbell is fucking with, is played by an actor I really like named Keith Zarabica.
He's not familiar to me.
He's mostly a TV guy. He was the main villain of, I think, Angel Season 3.
Okay.
And he was great. Like, I'm a big fan. I think he's really, really good. He's got a great, kind of a weirdly high-pitched, gravelly voice. And he's always got a good presence. I just really like him.
He played the voice of Laserbeak in one of the Transformers feature films.
Yeah, he does a lot of voice work. He's got a cool voice. Fond of Keith Zarabica. That's just a noteworthy shout out. Anyway, it boils down to Bruce Campbell. There's a bit where they talk about he's bad, but how bad is he? And the Time Cop's like, I buy that he would like cheat in gambling or like try to like do a stock market cheat. I also don't think he wants us dead. Like, and in the end, Bruce Campbell does actually take a bullet for them. Because he's corrupt, but he's not evil.
He's
Bruce Campbell, and you want to bring him back someday. And indeed, he kind of vanishes into the time stream again, so that eventually he will be able to come back someday.
He's going to have a recurring role.
He has to.
And Bruce Campbell, he's totally just Bruce Campbelling it up. He's, a bit charming, a little bit untrustworthy, very, very funny, not going to out-dashing the hero.
He could, though. Like, if this had actually starred Bruce Campbell, it might have been a slightly stronger show. Because I like T.W. King fine. Bruce Campbell's just a more charismatic actor.
T.W. King is... Well, and I don't think he's being asked to provide a lot of, overwhelming personality.
No, just
he's
a shame.
He's sort of like this flip kind of cool guy.
When you think about time travel television, I think the first thing a lot of people think of is Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And the thing with Doctor Who, different show, obviously, very different show. But what that show, I think, proves is that the protagonist of your program doesn't have to be a blank slate. They can have a really strong personality, and you can still get a lot of really exciting programming out of it.
Doctor Who had the advantage of, a lot. They spent many, many years sort of developing what the whole premise of the show was and who he was. So by the time... if you're going to catch up with it in like the mid-2000s when they rebooted the series, I feel like a lot of it's part of the conversation already. You don't have to explain a lot anymore.
Yeah, fair.
It's like what a TARDIS is, or how it functions, or why it's bigger on the inside.
I recently watched for the very first time the original pilot, like the first the first episode of Doctor Who. I was surprised at how much in place it was first episode.
Okay,
like a lot of the details, like he was an alien and he can change shape when he dies. I guess like that hadn't happened because that wasn't important yet. But just the basic premise and the basic personality of the show and the attitude the character had and the attitude towards time travel, it's kind of right there from the beginning. I was kind of impressed by how well together it was, considering what a bonkers concept it was when it came out.
I feel like Time Cop is trying to, because this is mid-90s sci-fi, they're all trying to rip off Star Trek. And so they're going for
a little bit X-Files, too.
A little bit X-Files, definitely. I think they're going for a little bit more of it being an institutional show. It's more about the Time Cop. Law and Order is another contributing factor to this.
Sure.
The institution itself is also kind of a character in the show.
Yeah.
The TEC is one of the things we want to sort of delve into. And as such, we're developing in a whole ensemble. Doctor Who isn't about an organization. It's about a guy who has a thing. It's a superhero show.
Yeah.
The Time Cop could be called a superhero. He's an enforcer who has time travel powers.
Real fast, because someone's going to complain if I don't mention it. In the 70s, he teamed up with UNIT, and for like 3 or 4 seasons, it was that show.
Fair enough.
Just to be thorough.
Not at all familiar with.
I don't need you to write in. I knew that. We can move on. Anyway.
My first exposure to Doctor Who was that American TV movie. From the
actually,
90s.
Mine too. Yeah. I had to go back eventually. But yeah, mine too.
This was back when Doctor Who was on public TV in the United States.
Yeah, it was on PBS.
So it was on PBS, and I think it was on like in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
So only really aspiring nerds could get a hold of Doctor Who back in the 90s. Because this show is so institutional and vocational, I think it's... I'm not trying to make excuses for the show, but I do understand why they took the approach they did.
It's doing a different thing. I appreciate it.
It's doing a different thing. So giving the lead character too much personality would have him overshadow all the other characters in the show. You need it to sort of be a little bit more well-rounded, a little bit more balanced. Mm. And you need that sort of one action guy who is none too bright and will follow orders, and that's our main character.
Fair enough.
And that's a perfectly decent way to base a show. Hmm.
So the remaining episodes of Time Cop were not released. I don't know how much they were filmed, they were only written, if they were just not edited together. Once the show was canceled, what's the point? There is a quote from Mark Verheiden, who co-created the character and was behind the movie as well. And I'm going to read it now about the cancellation of Time Cop. The ratings weren't good. The advertising wasn't awesome. Mark Verheiden said, quote, "In 2020 hindsight, I wish the show had been darker and grittier, both in terms of the storytelling and stylistically, but we were trying to deliver an 8 p.m. show. That meant doing something suitable for children, so gritty wasn't going to happen. We were just getting our sea legs story-wise with our last episode, which was a sweet story about Don Stark's character, Matichek, trying to reconnect with his teenage son." That was the second last episode, actually. "But we were canceled as that episode was wrapping production, and that, as they say, was that." The character of Jack Logan from the show did end up in a couple of books.
There were like, spinoff novels.
There's a couple of spinoff novels. The Jack Logan books were called Scavenger, Viper's Spawn, and Blood Ties. So if anyone wants to check those out, you can. I'm sure they're not... They're probably not super, you know, like super available, but I'd be surprised if there's like a big market for them. So if you find them, I'm sure they're not very expensive. Mm-hmm. That's basically been it for Time Cop. There were a couple of, I think, straight to video, made to TV movies just to cash in on the brand. There was some talk recently of rebooting it, although to the best of my knowledge, that hasn't gotten off the ground. The question I guess ahead of us is. Was Time Cop canceled too soon?
Definitely. There's so much more you could have done with this show.
Yeah, the opportunities like are kind of limitless, literally.
Like I said, it's a little bit corny. It's not very dark or edgy. I don't want to see a Time Cop show that's dark and edgy. I want to have fun with something like this.
Yeah, you want to be able to get serious for an episode once in a while, but you also want this to be
you want
escapist nerd shit.
You want time travel to seem like something fun and interesting, and you know, bring up a lot of interesting questions about causality and history. Kind of like the John Eric Hexum show.
Voyagers.
Voyagers.
Yeah.
That's just like that. Voyagers. Go to your local library. Look up stuff about history. That's a show that skewed a lot younger. That's a show for like littler kids. I think this one's a little bit more adolescent. But at the same time, we're having fun with it.
Yeah.
And everybody's having a good time. And everybody's kind of up and upbeat. And I like that about the show.
Yeah.
And it's a time travel show about going back and visiting interesting points in history.
Yeah.
You're not going to run out of that stuff.
No, of
course. Where's the Woodstock episode? Where's the Old West episode?
And we've had other time travel shows, even in America, since then, that have tried to do this kind of Time Cop riff. Mm. They're hard to keep going because they're expensive.
That is an issue.
They're expensive. Even the cheaper episodes tend to be expensive because you still need costumes. You can't use the same set every single week.
Yeah.
Every single episode is a bit of a production. And that must be frustrating because, on one hand, that's why we're here. We can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
On the downside, doing anything is expensive. So you've got to kind of rein it in.
Even when you're doing a time travel show on a budget, there's still a lot of resources being used.
But so what I appreciate...
This isn't like a hugely expensive show.
Right.
But it's expensive enough because they need a different set of...
But what I appreciate about Time Cop, the series, and it's something that... The movie, again, the movie's fine. It just, you know, there's so many, it writes so many checks it can't cash. There's just so many things, so many possibilities there that the movie could never do in an hour and a half unless I was writing it. And I could just put every single thing I wanted in there. Like, you're never going to get it. There's too many possibilities. They can only handle so many. With the show, there's an infinite number. And yeah, you're going to save your budget for the occasional big episode. But what I appreciate about Time Cop, the series, is that even the small episodes tended to have neat ideas that extrapolate from the basic premise of the series.
Yes.
We have this technology. What if this? What if a criminal went back in time specifically to do this instead of the usual shtick? What if the time machine broke in a certain way? Like, they knew how to mine the core concept for material that wasn't always super expensive. And I appreciate that. And I think they did a pretty good job. So, in the end, I think it gets better as it goes along. Like, the first couple episodes are a little clunky, but the ideas are always sound. As time goes on, yeah, I actually think the show gets better. And I think it is canceled too soon. Should it have lasted a really long time? I kind of want to see one or two full seasons to see if the crew that they had put together could keep it together for that long. Because coming up with 9 good time travel episodes is a little different than coming up with 44 in 2 years.
Yeah. Well,
like, I'm curious if they can keep this pace going.
Here's how, this happens with most ensemble shows. They grow over time. How many core characters we start with? We had Time Cop, we had Claire. Kurt Fuller and his boss. We essentially had 4 main characters.
Yeah.
And then we also already threw in Bruce Campbell. There was the other Claire.
There was Easter had an assistant in at least one episode. I think it was the last one. We just never got around to doing more with them.
Some of these like background extras that they're hiring just to sort of walk around in the back, they're going to start drifting into the viewer's eye, and they're going to start getting their own personalities. The more characters you have, the more interesting characters you can have to react to different time frames.
There's something we used to do, and we haven't done it a lot lately, which is we talked about if this series had gone on for 100 episodes. Mm. What would you like to have seen? Is there an episode of Time Cop in your head that you would have liked to have seen based on what we saw? No, like a character, because I have one.
Okay.
And I'm curious, because one thing we never saw in this series was Dr. Easter go back in time.
Okay, yeah.
We never have it. I would like to see an episode where Dr. Easter goes back in time and gets stranded and has to build a time sled.
That'd be kind of fun.
That would be kind of fun. Like kind of like a time, kind of like a Back to the Future 3 thing, but you put him in a different era.
Or he's the research guy, right? He likes the books and he likes the periodicals, and he gets to go back in time all the way back to the Library of Alexandria. And he has to watch it burn down because he can do nothing to stop it. Big tragic moment for him.
I know. I've always wanted to do something with that. I thought that'd be a cool idea. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I like that too.
All these characters could go back to periods in time that are relevant to them.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, that'd be cool.
And wouldn't it be keen if, they go back in time. And by the way, they don't bring their sleds with them. Oh, we didn't mention this. They have these little wristwatches.
Yeah.
They can kind of tap and
send
them
back. And then they go back to a portal. And then when they arrive in the sled. It's a little convenient, but whatever.
Zooming back the opposite direction.
I want to see Time Cop in a gladiator arena. I'm bummed we never got that.
Yeah, we didn't go back to ancient times. No. The furthest back we went, I think, was the Al Capone episode.
Civil War. Civil War.
Oh, Civil War.
Very briefly, we did the Civil War. There's the Pasco mentions going back further, but we never actually see that.
I would love to see like Time Cop go back in time, and he starts like leaning over this like puddle of primordial goo. It's like, oh god, okay, form a protein, form a protein. Otherwise, there's no human race. Please,
love it.
Like these amino, I'm trying to mix. Like he mixes the amino acids that start the first evolution on.
You're just such a Star Trek nerd. You just want to do the final episode of Star Trek again.
Yes.
Just John Delancey shows up from Legend. It's like, oh, see what you did. Anyway,
you undid the primordial goop.
Anyway, that is it for Cancel Too Soon. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another weird series. Whitney, why don't you introduce this one, because I know very little about it.
Oh, well, this is going to be our first foray, I believe, into the world of Jerry and Sylvia Anderson. Jerry and Sylvia Anderson created a whole series of shows in the 60s and I believe also the 70s, filmed in what they called Super Marionation. They're best known for Thunderbirds, but they also did Firebell XL5 and many other shows besides. There's one I'm very fond of called Joe 90. And all the characters are puppets. They're puppet programs. Mm. But the conceit is they're actually life-size people, so we'd cut to, like, close-ups of human hands. But yeah, when we'd see them sitting at desks and they'd barely be moving their lips. But they're always, like, these fun, kind of wild science fiction shows. And one of the shows they did that only lasted one season was called The Secret Service. And The Secret Service was about an MI6-like British spy agency that had in their employ a very kindly old vicar who would do spy things on the side, in addition to being a vicar, who was also a spy. And that's the premise of The Secret Service.
Awesome.
We're going to be doing The Secret Service.
I have next to no experience with Jerry Anderson's oeuvre. I've seen an episode here and there, but I never really...
You didn't see Thunderbirds Argo?
I've seen an episode of Thunderbirds. Like, that's it. Okay. I never really got into it. It wasn't on TV a lot when I was a kid, so I never really... I mean, if it was, I never saw it.
It was on public TV a lot as a kid.
I just never came up. I've seen very, very little of it, and I've never actually just sat down and watched an entire series of Jerry Anderson's. This is going to be real weird for me. If it isn't better than Lancelot Link, I'm going to be furious. Because Lancelot Link nearly killed us.
Lancelot Link was a really, really
one of the most painful shows to sit through we've ever gone through, and that's saying a lot.
No, this is a far cry.
I hope so.
Imagine like a kid friendly version of the Avengers, the spy show. Not the
Avengers was kid friendly.
I guess it was, but a little bit more, a little bit wilder, a little bit more Saturday morning.
Okay,
and that's I think it's sort of like maybe the mindset to have when going into Jerry and Sylvia Anderson.
Okay,
also watch those Thunderbirds movies. There's two Thunderbirds movies, and they're both good. There's Thunderbirds Argo, and the second one, confusingly enough, is called Thunderbirds 6.
That is very confusing.
Well, the conceit of Thunderbirds is the Tracy family, all these like handsome young brothers, are in charge of international rescue. They're like the Paw Patrol.
Uh-huh.
And each one of them controls a different Thunderbird, a different like fantastical vehicle of some kind.
It's Voltron, basically.
Well, they don't ever form together.
But it's like Voltron.
So there's the one in space, there's the satellite that's sort of tracking all of them. But yeah, there's like a rocket ship that can get there fast. There's a big, huge green rescue ship that can like rescue a bunch of people. There's an underwater one.
There's Paw Patrol.
More or less. Paw Patrol is taking its cues from Thunderbirds.
Which is fine.
And the sequel movie is about how they need they have five of them and they need a sixth one.
It's like the Bionic Six.
They have to make a Thunderbird 6, which is a sixth Thunderbird machine.
Bionic 6.
That's the Thunderbirds.
I think that was Knight Rider.
Well, that's...
I guess they're kind of similar. Yeah, it's... Although Knight Rider actually stole its theme from like a ballet, I heard.
Oh, yeah.
Some played from a ballet.
That's Thunderbirds.
I was going with the Bionic 6, which is short-lived. I think it lasted too long for our show's purposes, but there was a short-lived animated series.
Terrible program.
it was terrible. Amazing animation for the era. Go online, if you've never seen it before, go online and just look up the opening credits for this 80s animated show called Bionic 6.
The opening credits for these animated shows got a lot of attention, so they all look great, and then you get to the actual episode, and it's...
Bionic 6 was better than most, but like the animation's really, really cool, and it's basically like... The Fantastic Four, but if there were six of them and they had some adopted kids. Like, that's basically it. But Bionic 6 had a really catchy theme song that I've had stuck in my head since, like, 1990. So, there you go. Anyway, but that's it for Cancel Too Soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Big shout-out to all of our patrons, without whom our show would not exist. We're very, very grateful to you. If you would like to join our Patreon, we have a lot of stuff that comes with it, including you can vote for future episodes of our shows. You can have episodes of all our yesterdays, the Star Trek show we mentioned, where we review every single episode of Star Trek in order. You can listen to our show on that horrible Nazi episode by looking up in the history there. We've got Only the Best. We review every single film ever nominated for Best Picture. We do commentary tracks. We do a couple of movie trivia nights with our patrons every month. These are all available at patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. If you would like to talk about anything we discussed in this episode, we would love to hear from you. The best way to do so is to email us. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. We might read your email in an upcoming episode of our show, We've Got Mail. If you'd prefer to send us a physical letter, you may do so. Whitney, what is our P.O. Box?
Send it to Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
We're also on Twitter, @CriticAcclaim. I myself am @WilliamBibiani.
I'm @WhitneySeibold.
And that is a wrap. We'll see you next season. Meh.